Yeah, perfect.
Recording in progress.
Okay. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the BankerCast, and we're in episode 5 in the year of our Lord 2023. And I am really excited to have Addison Henry here today. I met Addison in May. No, yeah, in May.
Yeah.
At Louisiana Bankers Convention, and just really got to know him and decided he was a good guy. And we talked a lot, and we talked several times since then, and kind of commiserated a little bit. And I think Addison has a very interesting business. There's not a lot of businesses that are doing out there what you're doing. And I think what he brings to the table is very unique, especially if you're in a C-level position at a bank. There are some things that I think Addison can do to help save you money and make you money. Mm-hmm. And so that's really important here today. But before we jump into any of that, let's just start with straight up introductions. So Addison, tell everybody who you are, where you're from, who's your mom and them.
Perfect. Addison Henry from Lafayette, Louisiana, born and raised in Cajun culture, not necessarily a Cajun, but by way of virtue, I'm here. And
if you were Cajun, you say Henri instead of Henry.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But born and raised here, went to school at UL and then off to the races in the financial world and wound up, working with tax credits.
And you didn't always live in Lafayette though. When you graduated, didn't you leave?
No. Well, for a short period of time, we lived in Houston for a couple of years, but mm-hmm. that was about a 2-year period. And then,
came back. It's home.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Kids.
Yep. 4 kids, married for 17 years, 4 kids aging from 5 to 15.
Awesome. Boys or girls?
3 boys, 1 girl. And oldest is a boy, then it's girl, then the two
so
bros at the bottom.
5 to 15, so he's in the smelly stage.
Yeah.
Smelly stage. Oh, please pick your clothes up. Yeah. Your room smells bad.
It just reminds you that you don't necessarily remember how you were at 15, but then when you have a 15-year-old son and he's doing stuff, you're like, God, I guess I did that too.
Absolutely. Yeah. I look at it and say, oh, catch back.
Yeah. Right? It's like, God, I've come so far.
And what's your wife's name?
Maddie.
So give Maddie a shout out.
Yeah. Maddie Henry, really good life partner. Been together, like I said, 17 years married. Even before that, I'm 37. So we got married at a young age.
You did?
Yeah, we did. And very good marriage. And so it's been just a blessing.
Hi, Joby.
Yeah, we met at the time. Right after high school, I started working for this guy that had a diesel fuel additive business. And the business just really just went absolutely berserk. So much to the point that my salary was based on a commission structure in college. And I was making well over $100,000 in college.
Oh,
which
my
was,
gosh.
Which was just not what I expected. Nobody. And then. So he worked, this guy had other businesses that my wife worked at, and we shared the same faith. And he said, look, you need to meet this girl. I think y'all make a good pairing, a good partnership. And so that's where we met and wound up getting married probably 8 months after we met, 8 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Awesome. Wow. My wife did. I tell people we got married 8.5 months after we met, they look at us like, were you out of your mind? Like, I mean, I knew what I wanted.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that was it.
Yeah.
I was done.
Yeah.
Now I was older than you.
Yeah.
A good bit. So I think my family didn't say anything just because they were happy that somebody would take
me. Somebody would take you off the books.
I think my mom was just celebrating.
Yeah. I can appreciate that. And then y'all been married for what?
We'll be 35 years this December.
Okay. So just getting started.
Yeah. Just getting started. It would be. I think there's a restart every 7 or 8 years. It's just the way those cycles go. Like, oh, there's a new stage, and so we're kind of in that new stage now. With we only have one at home, and it's with having 6 kids, like you with 4 kids, it's like it's a crowd.
So yeah,
it's getting a little quiet.
Yeah,
which is a nice stage to be in.
Mm-hmm.
I had the conversation with her this past week that like we need to actually start doing stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, the kids aren't occupying us. We need to do something.
I
don't want to stay home today.
Yeah.
She's like, what do you want to do? I was like, I don't know. I don't know. Something besides sit in the house.
Yeah.
And usually my go-to would be, Joseph knows this, let's have an old-fashioned.
Oh, my God. Oh my God.
That's my startup. Let's have an old fashioned, then we'll decide.
Listen, Jay, you should have brought old fashions on the podcast. This would have turned it up a little
bit. We have thought about it. Joseph and I talked about stocking a little bar in the office, you know, for when we have guests in and, you know, maybe a little Angel's Envy neat or something like that. And,
for those of you that don't know, this is occurring at about lunchtime on a Friday, which is about the time that Jay's ready to for an old fashioned. So I second that motion.
Exactly right. It's anything bourbon for me.
Yeah.
I am like, that's anything bourbon.
Yeah, that's good.
So, and the Rock and Bowl building, we'll give Rock and Bowl a little plug, which is where we are in Lafayette, on Thursdays and Fridays has 2-for-1.
Old fashions?
Yeah. And they have a... For tenants in the building.
Okay.
Or their guests.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
They have a really good old fashioned. And Joe's drinks a Negroni.
Negroni,
which is, he likes it, but
yeah. I don't know what that is.
It's very bitter.
Okay. Yeah. 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 I'm down with Jay. I'm down with the old fashioned.
I make a killer old fashioned, I'll have to say.
Yeah.
Not, you know, as humble as I can be, I make a killer old fashioned.
Exactly.
It'll make dry brows flutter a little bit.
I'm okay with going along with that train. We'll have to make sure we
do that sometime.
Man. Yeah.
So it would be a lot of fun. So, you know, a little more on the personal stuff. So your kids, where they go to school?
Kids go to school at Milton Elementary and Southside High. Between the two. So this is the first year where all of the kids are going to be in school. So Maddie's going to be home, you know, doing what, you know, she's a full-time mom, you know.
That's awesome.
So this is going to be a good year for her.
I love to hear that. You know, a lot of young couples aren't doing that anymore. So it's a blessing. I mean, my wife stayed home. She's been home for 28 years.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's been a lot of work. I mean, she had a lot of work to do. It's not easy, but it really is a blessing to have that. It just changes the home life, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. The dynamic's fantastic because we you know, a lot of people say, well, all the pressure's on you, Addison, you know, but we've always had it that way. It's been that way since we were married at 20 till now. So there's no difference in lifestyle.
Well, and I think people who say that, just going to run down this path real quick, but people who say that don't understand that, like my wife, I mean, like I said, 28 years, she was a teacher. It's still a partnership. I mean, still
100%.
She contributes and helps you talk through your business. I mean, it's not that she stands on the sideline and says, I'm just going to wear an apron all day and look good.
Yeah. Jay, just to give you an idea, this year already, we're in August. I've flown probably well over 40,000 miles already year. Been traveling every month. You know, my wife does 100% of everything at the house from cradle to grave, from the moment that kids are waking up to going to bed, bathing, brushing teeth and all that while I'm gone on the road.
Yeah.
So, you know,
it's
that job,
work.
Yeah. 4 loads of laundry a day, you know, whatever it is.
Well, that's just 15 loads of laundry.
Oh, man. You know, I hold that with a hazmat suit.
Look, dude, like, does he play any sports?
No, but they're active outside and like horses and stuff like that.
Well, that'll
like,
do
live
it.
Out in the, you know, so
the horse smell in a teenage room is probably not really,
Yeah, it's you know, we have to promote good hygiene at this age.
A hose helps that.
Yeah, hose, whatever.
Spray off before you come in the house.
Like, son, don't sit on the couch like that. About to get beat, boy. We're in the bath. Go take a bath.
Please go take a bath.
Go take a bath.
All right. So your business, Vine.
Yep.
You've been in this line of business for quite some time. You and I talked about that. Let's talk first about what the business is.
Yep.
And just in general terms, what the business is, what does it do? And then I want to kind of take a little turn and say, okay, how did you get into this?
Sure.
Because you're a guy from Lafayette, Louisiana, graduated from ULL.
Yeah.
It's not the typical line of business that somebody would go into from our area. I mean, it just isn't.
It's not. And it's so well suited for my personality. And I don't take credit for getting down this path because I would not have chosen this path. I didn't know that it even existed. I didn't know that a tax credit was a thing until, you know, everybody gets, not everybody, but at some point, whenever you have kids, you'll get like a child tax credit, depending on your income and, you know, how many kids you have and all that stuff. But in general, tax credits have been around since the mid-70s. And those credits come in just a wide form, right? There's federal credits and then there's state credits. What the IRS and the government will do is they use credits, federal tax credits or state tax credits, to incentivize placement of money, private money, right? So for example, everyone, not everyone, but you know, most institutional guys will know that now that since the Inflation Reduction Act has come out, there's several new federal tax credits that have been introduced or revitalized, right? So they'll, let's just say they wanted to incentivize, I'll give you a real example. So most solar panels in the United States come from overseas, right? There's child labor laws, there's taxation laws that are in play. And the Department of Commerce last year, I think sometime in 2022, in April of 2022, there was a anti-dumping issue with all of these solar panels that were coming in into the U.S. So part of the Inflation Reduction Act was we're going to incentivize manufacturing of these solar panels within the United States. So that gives you an example of what I was just describing. The U.S. government will issue a tax credit to incentivize what their agenda is and what they want.
So they're trying to incentivize the manufacturing in the United States, keeping the money local.
Right.
In the United States, that's a good thing.
Right. And then there's no, you don't have to worry about, you know, these four regions in, you know, China or wherever, Malaysia, circumventing, you know, the laws that we have for importing.
Yeah, having an 8-year-old build a solar panel at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Right. Kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah. Instead, we're going to reach to the depths of, you know, wherever in the United States to provide that. And I think it's good. But that just gives you the example of how a tax credit can be.
Well, it's an effective use. And we've talked about this on the podcast before. It's an effective use of private public partnership.
Yeah.
Right. Because the private side of that will deploy that money much better.
1000%
than the public side ever can. And so if we can continue to develop those private public partnerships, then they're more effective. I mean, you look at just things that have happened in downtown Lafayette because of opportunity zone credits, those kind of things. It has transformed Lafayette, downtown Lafayette, in a lot of ways.
100%. And that, what, yeah. So there's several different types of tax credits that are available, and I don't know the names of all of them. Then some of them that are available aren't used, right? It's just, if it doesn't make sense to use them, it's an attempt by the government to funnel money that way. And if it doesn't get used, then, you know, so it just, you know, the private market will determine that quickly. Fortunately for the tax credit industry, again, it's been around since the mid-70s. In you know, by 1986, they came out with the low-income housing tax credit, and that is what essentially was used to pull away from the public housing authority owning and developing real estate for low-income families. That LIHTC program is still going extremely strong to this day, right? And so
those public housing places were a disaster.
Yeah, a disaster. And you know, for government to get funding and to revamp a, you know, a building, there's criteria when you go in to revamp a multifamily unit where the private sector is on the line for the debt. So they've got an asset that they've got to, you know.
And they're going to do it better.
Right. And there's a compliance period for 10 to 15 years. So, I mean, look, it's a very serious business when it comes to taking federal dollars and deploying them. And you better be in compliance and do it right, because you certainly don't want to overinflate. And, you know, anyway, there's I'm getting into the technical, but it's a great, I think.
So it's, how'd you get into it?
Yeah. So I'll give you the long or the brief history. So graduated college in 2008 from UL, started a very small firm with some other folks here in Lafayette called Harbor Capital. We were buying non-performing loans through that, one of the investors introduced me to his son, who had a very sizable portfolio at the time. It was about 1 million square feet of real estate, all layered with tax credits, right? New market tax credits, historic tax credits, both state and federal. And he said, listen, I love what you're doing, you know, at Harbor Capital for us. And I think you do a great job. My son does something a little different, and it's just morphed into something more than he can handle, which was very, very true. 1 million square feet of real estate is, and this guy, the guy that I'm talking about, he runs a very successful, his name's David Weinstein out of Baton Rouge. He runs a very successful Morgan Stanley platform. And anyway, so I went in to work with him, learned about these credits, really liked, we layered in. So what happens is a developer comes in and they'll develop a piece of property, whatever it is, right? We're going to just stick with real estate. They'll take an old historic building, like, for example, the old federal courthouse downtown Lafayette. You take that building and then you spend money according to the State Historic Preservation Office, wherever you're at, whatever state. And you've got eligible costs that are associated with the build. Those costs essentially yield a tax credit, right? Let's just say if you got a, you spent $100 and 40% of that is a tax credit. So you'll get $40 in tax credits of that $100 spend. Then that tax credit you sell or monetize in a way that, you know, you structure it to go to the benefit of the investor, right? So
which is where we come in.
So this goes back to how did I get into it? So started with Harbor Capital, then meandered through and worked with this other guy and his team to, you know, kind of sort through all the projects that they had in development. So I was really just baptized by fire, right? So we were the developer, and we worked with other syndicators. So
you were how old at this time?
Oh, 28. So that's 28, so 10 years ago.
In terms of experience, that's pretty young.
Oh yeah, yeah, young for sure. And to top it off, they gave me a fancy title of chief operating officer, which I really, you know, at the time I was thinking, well, look, I'm essentially the janitor and the guy that's reviewing operating agreements. So whatever.
Which one did you do better at, the janitor or the operating agreements?
Listen, but I'll sweep a number of men.
I'm sure Maddie's very happy that you could do that.
Listen, I help with the house, in-house chores and the outside. So that's how I got in, right? And so at that point in time, the partnership between these two guys, one guy was an architect, the other was a Morgan Stanley financial broker. The architect, Dyke Nelson, was just fantastic. I mean, the guy knew tax credits inside and out. And as an architect, he really was a double threat because he understood the architectural construction side and the financial side. So when I tell you I had the best group of folks to train me and expose me to this, it was just absolutely perfect. So we started kind of going through their, you know, portfolios and that was my exposure to the tax credit syndication side. So as the developer, we would hire and use firms like mine to monetize and syndicate the credit.
Okay.
If that makes sense. Yeah. Okay. So that's how I got into it. That's how I started.
Okay. So obviously you enjoy doing it.
Love it.
What do you love about it?
I love it because every deal is like a snowflake. So you have several different ways to structure this, right? And it really uses your mental capacity to figure out, all right, there's IRS compliance, there's partnership law, there's transferable credits, there's recapture risk that you have to solve for, there's underwriting for the actual asset. So if you're a guy that likes to go and get into the weeds, and then you also like to scale, it's really kind of like a counterintuitive thing. Most guys that are into the weeds don't like to scale, right? They go an inch wide and a mile deep, and then they're capped at their potential because they don't like the process.
Well, I don't think he's capped, but Joseph likes the weeds.
Right. Well, so if you like the weeds,
I'm the scaler.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what I like about it. I like the nuance, and I also like the ability to scale and people person. I like interacting with people. So I get to interact with the legal team that prepares all of our documentation, CPAs, developers, and it's this revolving door of people that just, you know, you get to repeat, rinse, repeat, and scale. A lot of fun for me. So
that's awesome.
Thanks for asking.
So, and then Vine. So transition. So if I remember right, you transitioned from there to Vine?
No. So I transitioned from that group to another group that was out of Missouri. They are, it was another great group. They were solar developers, which the historic tax credit program closely mirrors the solar tax credit program, the investment tax credit, as far as structuring, and it did at the time. And so I went to that group. I was a CEO, managing member there. We went through a sale process. Once we finished that sale process, I started Vine in January of this year. So, again, at the first firm, we were real estate developers. We started syndicating the federal credit at the very end on a couple of our own deals, which means we would go out and find the investor to place the cash. We wouldn't hire somebody to do that for us.
Keep more of the share.
And it really was just a business that once I kind of started to understand it towards the end, I was like, this is the way I describe it, Jay, to people, is that it's a financial orchestra that we, you know, kind of collaborate and make a symphony out of. And so all the pieces come together at the right time, you know, with the right metrics, and we make something really beautiful come together on the financial side.
Mm-hmm.
That's really hard to do if you're, you know, if you're just learning what a tax credit is.
Okay.
So then that group, then that's when Vine started 6-7 months ago.
So describe, so you've talked a lot about basically the resale
mm-hmm.
of the tax credits.
Mm-hmm.
Describe to our listeners how that works. Why is that a good thing? Why is that a good thing for an investor to come look at and buy?
Okay.
Like, you know, like if you're a C Corp bank and they have $1.5 million in tax credits.
Yep.
How, just kind of walk somebody through that process, because we're going to have a lot of listeners who have no idea what you're talking about.
Right. Okay. I'll take this from like a 30,000 foot view, just so okay. We have kind of a raw understanding and look. The keeping the end in mind, the end goal is to save money on your tax liability, right? So if you're a bank and you're operating under tier one capital and you've got to have deposits, and the more money you have in deposits, the more you can lend out. Everybody's trying to figure out, hey, well, I got to get a CD rate of 6% or 5% to keep my deposits here. But the other thing for that is, well, why don't you just keep more of what you have, right? So if you've got a $10 million tax liability, we can structure a transaction that saves you between 15 and 20% on your federal tax liability. So instead of paying $10 million in tax in your tax liability, we could work that down to 8 to 8.5, right? Depending on the structure and how we work the deal. But the end goal is, yes, I want to save money on my federal tax liability. The other ancillary benefits of that are that you receive what's called like an ESG component, right? Which I think is, personally, I don't have an affinity for that, but essentially what it means is that the US government's put out some carbon net neutrality, you know, goals, right? So let's stop the carbon, let's offset it, whatever. As a result of the investments that we pursue, you receive, I would call it the green glow that you can advertise.
Sorry, try not to laugh.
Yeah, the green. It's
it's the government. Right. Absolutely, I understand.
Right, and you know, certain people like what I call, I'm using a lot of slang here, so if there's any professionals that know me or that are CPAs, they may come in and want to fine tune the terminology, but I'll give you an example. So like a bank will come in and they'll have a tax liability, and I think they're more yield based. So they care about saving money on their federal tax liability. Now, if you go into another sector, like let's say a roadway construction company or an offshore driller, an exploration and production company, you know, their money, they pollute, right? And that's just part of the deal. It's not I'm not hating on those guys. I love them. Several of my friends are running those companies, and, but they have some pressure that they have to solve for. And one of the ways to solve for that is you can take your tax liability and offset your carbon footprint by just using your tax liability.
Oh,
so for example, let's say
I'm not sure how that really offsets a carbon footprint, but I'll buy it. I mean,
here's what it is. You
without getting into the political.
No. The projects don't work. Essentially without the federal tax credit. So the tax credit investor, essentially, there's different ways to structure this, right? But the tax equity investor essentially owns 99% of the project without the liability of the debt for a five-year compliance period. So that project goes through an independent engineer report. It's backed by an EPA.gov calculator that says, okay, this is going to produce this much and it's going to offset this much carbon. Right. And then that carbon, for example, like a $16 million tax equity contribution offsets 272 million pounds of CO2. Right. Because of the investment in the solar array, you're offsetting the amount of carbon
that's where it's
otherwise.
From. Okay. The solar array. Yeah. I get it. Okay.
Otherwise been generated by coal power plant or gas power plant or whatever. Right. And trust me, I'm not an advocate for any of that. I'm a financial guy that deals with credits. And this is, you know, this is
it's
part
a credit.
Of the deal.
Absolutely. Yeah. I get it.
So I hope that answers that question. But the reason ultimately, again, the reason is people want to save money on their federal tax liability.
Well, sure. And they don't want the money going. We'd rather hold on to it.
Exactly.
And reinvest it locally.
Right? Absolutely.
In our own businesses. 100%. In our own employees. So you've been in since January of 2022 or 23. So that's a big leap.
Yeah.
For you to become self-employed.
Yeah. Big leap. So my wife and I, we took a year before we knew that this, whenever I started with the group out of Missouri, we knew that this was going to be a transitional period, that I would only be there, that the group was either going to go public or we were going to sell. And so once we picked a path, we stuck to that path and went down it. And we prayed about it. We're like, all right, look, what are we going to do? Right. I can go work for somebody else. But honestly, I wanted the expressive freedom to be myself unapologetically in any sense, form of faith and just personality, and express that in my business. And also to create a culture for other high performers to come in and work with us. Right. And be able to have the expressive freedom and some other things. Not saying that work-life balance is always perfect, because I don't think it is, but I want to promote an environment that generates that culture.
Okay.
So anyway.
And that's one of the reasons why I liked you when we met you. Well, that's the things that you said.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think that's what propelled our conversations more, was because I was like, well, Jay, you got everything that I'm wanting as far as an infrastructure side. I just don't have a team yet because I just started my business.
You will, though.
But
if you need somebody, give them a shout out. We'll let you know how to get. Actually, at the end of the podcast, we want you to let everybody know how to get in touch with you.
Yeah.
You may have somebody that's listening to the podcast that says, one, either I want to get in that business.
Yeah.
Or number two, that might be something they want to invest in. They might want to reach out and.
Yeah. And that's, look, I'll field and take all of those calls. And I'm happy to, sort of my philosophy in business is that I enjoy being a resource for people that either have an interest or want to have an interest. You don't have to feel obligated to do business with me just because we talked on the phone. I think that there's a ton of business in the world that go around. So like, I am competitive, but I'm not sour. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense.
You know,
I'm very competitive, but I understand the not sour part.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, and as a matter of fact, I had one example of that is I work with a lot of other tax syndicators that are much bigger than me because I'm just starting, and have agreements with them to handle overflow and under, overflow. And I guess what I'm trying to say is when I have too many credits and I can't fulfill those credits, I can bring those to other syndicators
and they will.
And they will.
And then you still get a piece of that pot.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I won't make any money on that, but I keep a good reputation with the developers that I want. That way I can fulfill.
We're only 7 months in. Mm-hmm. How's it going?
Very good. So it's really good. There's, since the Inflation Reduction Act has come out, I think everybody in my industry, which is a very small industry, has a lot to digest. I think the Inflation Reduction Act was like 800 pages, and then you've got other addendums, and it's just a ton. So everybody's sort of ready to move, but we don't have the guidance for everything that was outlined in the Inflation Reduction Act. But there's a ton of business, right? And it's been very good. It's been very good for Vine and for me.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Good. My wife and I discussed when we started this thing, we were given it, you know, like a 3-year window for this. And I think that's an appropriate time, you know, to establish yourself. And if it hadn't happened in that time frame, then
sounds like you're on your way.
No, on the way for sure. We've got a ton for you. Yeah, appreciate it. We got a lot of wind in our sails for sure.
Really good. All right. So let's take a left turn before you go down the personal route.
Yeah.
Outside of work. Work. Forget work. What do you do with your spare time?
Okay. I love that question. And thanks for asking. So I've got 4 kids and a wife. I don't have a whole lot of free time because I want to be present in their life. But what I enjoy doing when I do have some free time, I enjoy working out. So I'll work out 2-3 times a week. Right. And that's just good for my mental health. I love doing yard work, just being outside in the sun, which also parlays. I'm a terrible, terrible, terrible golfer, but I enjoy it. And it's just fun because I like being outside and I like hanging out with the guys.
I like driving the car. I'm not a golfer.
Look, I've done that too, where I've been around some really good.
If you want to win, you're going to play me. That's just no matter what, whoever I'm playing against is going to win.
Yeah. Sorry for all the folks that I'll be golfing with and whatever conference I'm at next, because it's just a. I managed to make a ball go 90 degrees off the tee. So,
That's pretty rough.
Yeah.
Did it kill anybody?
No. Just it hit some guy's house. But that's not the first time, and it won't be the last. But I enjoy it. You asked me what I like to do.
So there you go. You just like being out there socializing. That's what it's all about.
I do. Okay. That's it.
That's good. Okay. You know. So who cooks your house? You or your wife?
Good question. I do. I cook. I'm a big cook and I love to cook.
What's your favorite thing to cook?
Well, I really, really, really enjoy, you know, kind of the Southern comfort foods, like a smothered rice and gravy, whether with beef or chicken. I'm not so much into pork. It just tastes sweaty to me. But I'll take, you know, we'll do like an etouffee.
Wait. What does sweaty taste like?
Sweaty. Go eat some pork butt. Pork Boston butt roast. That's a sweaty piece of meat. Nasty. Been sweating in the yard all day and then jumps in your pot and then you put it in your belly. So Matt, you talked about my 15-year-old son having stinky clothes.
So he smells like Boston butt roast. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. And I think all my kosher Jewish friends would agree that it's just a sweaty, nasty meat.
Okay. All right. Southern comfort food.
Southern, that makes sense. Southern comfort food. And I like taking simple dishes and elevating them, or like taking like a Mexican, you know, dish with like all the different colors, and you've got, you know, fresh corn tortillas and pickled onions, habanero, and, you know, just all those things, you know, and just putting it together and having people over. We cook a meal on Sundays. We used to do this more than we do now, but, you know, a couple times a month, we'll have people over on Sundays and just that's have nice. A big dinner, yeah, you know, and really I love doing that.
That's kind of the Southern hospitality thing.
Yeah. And it's good.
Have you ever made homemade pasta?
Oh yeah. I actually,
my son Daniel started making it. It is so good.
Fantastic.
It makes store-bought pasta. It's like you never want to do it again.
So my mom just got back from Italy. She took a cooking class there. We were at her house last night and she cooked. It was homemade pasta with a bolognese, And, you know,
give your mom a shout out.
Listen, hey, mom, love you, mom. but it was, yeah, that's, yeah. And are you a cook? Is that what you're?
My wife cooks. I cook too, but Robin is primarily the cook.
Okay.
She's far and above, has much greater skill in cooking than I have. Although when we first got married, she could not even boil water.
Really?
Yes. She went to, her grandmother realized that my wife's husband, who is me,
yeah,
loved to eat.
Yeah.
And she went, this man likes to eat. Yeah. You need to learn to cook.
I see that.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Mama.
Because up until that point, I was cooking.
We need to give Mama a shout out for 30-something years ago.
She had Mama cooking school. She would show up at Mama's house every Wednesday, and they would cook, and she'd come home. And that went on for years.
Okay, that's I would love to hear and be a fly on the wall for those conversations to see and how that went down, because that's what a real treat to learn that way.
Oh yeah, because like you're talking, I mean, that's just things that have been passed down generation to generation. And she taught her certain things, like never. One of the things Robin says is never, ever, ever scrimp on the ingredients. Ever. She says when you scrimp on the ingredients and buy the cheap stuff, it's going to taste cheap.
Yeah.
Like sweaty meat.
Like sweaty meat. For all of you wondering.
Dessert. Favorite dessert.
Mine?
Mm-hmm.
Not a big dessert guy. I'll eat a cookie.
Really?
That's really it. I don't really eat dessert. That's a funny. I'm not a candy guy or anything. Yeah. Maybe a cookie. Like a, you know, I don't know. Like a macadamia nut cookie or something.
I'm
yeah.
all things banana.
Really?
Anything with banana.
Like banana bread?
Yes. Banana pudding, banana bread.
Okay.
Bluebell banana pudding ice cream, anything bananas.
Have you had the bread pudding? Oh, not bread. That's not banana. I was thinking bread pudding.
I wonder if you can do bread pudding with banana. You probably could.
My mind went somewhere else.
I usually do like the banana. We have a really good gluten-free banana nut recipe.
Okay.
And it's really good. So because I don't go the gluten route very often, but
okay.
Just because of an allergy, but bananas or chocolate.
Yeah.
Chocolate. Robin, my wife, learned from my side of the family, it makes a really, if you don't like really super sweet, you would like chocolate pound cake because it's not super sweet, but it's good and rich.
Okay. I'm into that.
Chocolate pound cake. It is my favorite. Now she doesn't like it because it's not super sweet.
Yeah.
But I love it. That's my birthday every year. Huh. Chocolate pound cake.
I'm gonna have to remember that.
Banana pudding at all other times, but
okay. Very good. Is it moist or is it more dry?
It's moist.
Okay.
It's heavy.
Yeah. I'm into that.
Yeah.
I respect that.
It's heavy. Alcohol. We talked about old fashioned, so we already know you like an old fashioned.
I know. And I'm disappointed now. I'm disappointed that we don't have old fashions.
Next time, Addison, we'll have you on again. We'll do old fashions.
I'm not about to leave this place now.
Maybe next time we'll just have let's have a podcast to talk about bourbon.
Yeah. Well, listen, we can. Yeah. I like tequila.
Really?
Blanco tequila. Yeah.
I can't drink tequila. It makes me crazy.
Really?
I mean, really crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, no.
So not good. When Jesus turned water into wine, in my version, it would have been tequila. But listen.
And he would have said, see that guy over there dancing? Yes. Acting like an idiot? That's J Tube. So no tequila for me.
Mary, look what you did.
See what happened? I told you I didn't want to do this.
Okay. All right. We'll keep it strictly to old fashioned.
Look, we had a tequila drink on the beach. I can't remember what they made, but it was really good. I liked it. It was good. But I only had one.
Yeah. Well, look, if you drink it like a, you know, like it should be consumed, you can take a little bit of Topo Chico with a little tequila and a lime zest, and you have a little refreshing drink and you're not.
I think it was something simple like that. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
It was good.
They call that like a Texas ranch water or something.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so tequila, but not, I say that, but I have zero tequila at my house. So, I mean, yeah, I guess not that big of a drinker, but if I'm going to, I like that. You know,
we didn't have a lot of alcoholic beverages at the house while the kids were there.
Yeah,
but now they're gone. We've got a pretty good stock bar.
Yeah, yeah. Just nothing here at the office, Russ. So.
Well, next time.
Yeah,
there you go. Next time.
All right.
Joseph literally talked about that this week. Yeah. We need to have a bar.
Yeah. You got to set the culture right for these young guys. You got to come into work
Robin
and slam
a
few.
Heel homie.
Yeah.
Set that kind of culture up. She would not be happy with me at all.
The Celebrate Recovery or Alcoholics Anonymous guys would be, they'll be on the next podcast. After
they're going to reach out to me and say, we need to talk.
But after we do our old fashioned.
They're going to think we're like big alkies here. Well, I might drink once a week.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, Addison, I have really enjoyed having you here.
Yeah.
I wish your business the greatest of success.
Thank
we
you.
Do have a lot of executive level people that listen to us. And I think some of them listening are probably thinking maybe that tax credit is something we need to look at.
Yeah.
So give people some multiple ways to reach out to you.
Yeah, perfect. So one of the first ways, I'll take any form of communication, phone call, text, or email. Email is Addison, Addison, at Vine, Vine, firm, firm.com. Or you can call me or text me at 337-258-2449. Happy to, you know, arrange a meet and greet and discuss with you, you know.
Good. Thank you very much. I appreciate you coming in.
A lot of fun. Yeah. Jay,
I had a good time.
Joe, thank y'all. This has been a blast.
That's good.
A lot of fun. Thank you
very much. Thank you, guys. Listen in to us again next month with our next guest, who is going to be Kerry Chopin, who is a good guy at Gulf Coast Bank, and he is one of the best lenders I know. So anybody on that business development side is going to want to listen in to Kerry. Thank you.